First, I'm going to break the rule, and I would like right now, especially for those of you who are going to run out in a minute, to thank all the panelists for their presentation. Okay, so we do have some time for questions, and as a moderator, I get to take the liberty to ask the first question. And maybe this might be a hard question, but it's one that we're already getting, and this is for Eleanor in particular. So critics, researchers, et cetera, will say, well, this wasn't a randomized control study, so how can we say that shelters are effective or that they really work? What's your response?
That is a tough question. Certainly, if we had huge amounts of resources and an ability to draw a random sample from across the nation, we would have been interested in being able to do that. We have people in crisis. We have a wide variety of other reasons why people may or may not be able to or willing to participate. We do know that 81% of the programs in those eight states did participate. We did try to calculate a response rate compared to the numbers, but shelter programs don't consistently keep those that are date-bound in a way that we were able to do that. It resonates very much with all the advocates and the knowledgeable people who have heard the results, so that this squares with their experience. We did have a wide range and a diverse range of people and regions who participated. I would not go to the bank and say, well, if we found 51% said this, that means it's exactly 51% across the nation of all survivors who felt this way or had this experience. So I see this as a start. But given all the constraints, I think we actually did quite a good job of a reasonably representative response.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, in the white right here.
First of all, as a former shelter advocate, legal justice advocate, shelter director, thank you for all the work that's involved in doing this. I know that it's very time and researcher, time consuming, and but very important. And I think that the results are very indicative of some things that we need to look at across the country around policy and shelter criteria. My question is somewhat related to the protective order and restraining order issues, and there's a lot of content in there, a lot of numbers, strong numbers around assistance with civil advocacy around orders of protection and restraining orders and things like that. In my current role, I manage the first and only automated protective order notification system that's being implemented across the country in a couple of different states. And so my question was there any indication that victims and survivors who are entering shelter for fear of retaliation immediately following the issuance of an order because they were unaware if they had been served, they were unaware of, you know, the mindset of that abuser, and if in our designing of information, accessible information for victims and notification services, what can we do better to make sure that we're addressing some of those needs?
I think you highlight a very important need. That is one of many areas that we did not explore in more depth. I think this is a kind of overview and gives some direction for much further research that would be useful to conduct. I mean, there were lots of questions that I was dying to ask that we had to say, no, we have to set a limit. We have people who are in shelter and in crisis, and so we need to keep it simple and to answer the questions that we identified. That would have been something that would be very useful. I think you probably know anecdotally that does happen, and I couldn't tell you the extent to which from this study.
Actually, a second question to mine. And this is really regarding transitional housing. Mm-hmm. Of those programs, did you have any, were you able to do any analysis regarding those that had further housing needs or desire for their housing needs when transitional housing was not part of the program that they were part of? There's any differences there?
We did not ask the shelter program whether they were part of a larger program that had a transitional housing component. We do know that, as you heard from some of the voices, and those were just a few, that many were talking about the time limits and how the time that they were there was not enough to make the changes and to put all the pieces together that they needed in order to make the kinds of changes that they wanted, completely make the changes that they wanted to in their lives, and that would be useful. I think that's one of the clear implications of this, is that transitional housing services are critical and in dire need. But we weren't able to do that kind of analysis.
Yes, the woman in the green.
Yeah, I'm also in Connecticut. I was just kind of disturbed by the fact that you said that the majority of the women that heard about the shelters were either white or Latino. Is that a reflection on the officers not communicating this to minority women, or the minority women not involved in the police and their domestic violence issues?
I can't answer that question based on this study. I am only reporting that there were those differences among the survivors in their account of how they had heard about the shelter. I think that it's notable that nearly a quarter of them heard from the police, and that was only 5% below the rate at which they had heard from advocates. So they had heard about shelter from a lot of different sources. So I wouldn't be quite as alarmed about that necessarily, but it may indicate different responses and interactions with police or the courts.
Is it a shortcoming on the part of the police officers, or is it just the fact that the minorities were not involved in the police?
I don't think we have too much evidence that people of color are not involving the police necessarily. Certainly in the Connecticut court system, it's a majority of people going through domestic violence cases and domestic violence special sessions.
Yes, right here.
Karen Rose, University of Pennsylvania. Do you find many variations in quality between sites? I know they would be identified, but where you could see that some were lower and others were higher, reported averages, and it would make more sense there. And if so, were there some urban-rural differences?
We were able to do some analyses by capacity of the shelter, so the size, and that becomes a kind of proxy, because when we were looking at the county-level data, it became harder to say where exactly this shelter was and whether it was an urban one. So I think a good proxy would be the number of staff and the number of beds and the size of the shelter. One of the ironies that I found was that it was the midsize and smaller shelters that people reported more satisfaction with than the larger, which may mean that in some cases there's more of an institutional kind of feel to the larger shelter, even though they offer more services in theory. So that we did find. But we didn't do it, you know, by specific program. There's still a good deal of very particular analysis that we hope to be able to do, but we have a lot of other kinds of conversions to do, because there were some culturally specific shelters that were involved in the study just based on descriptions of the staff, and we want to be able to pull that out. So you suggest a real interesting line of analysis.
Let's go to the back here on this side.
I just want to get back to this police officer's question, because I do think that's an important point. And when we think about police officers as frontline gatekeepers, we're presenting a study tomorrow that's funded by the National Institute of Justice for Women that we focus groups for all police involved women, yet none of them knew about the role of shelter. We
holding them at the shelter and the victim would talk about it. But I think what we learned from our qualitative interviews and then we were analyzing the quantitative data on these thousands of women based on qualitative input is that we think as gatekeepers vary based on silos, but I think that for the women we serve, it's more blurred than that. So a police officer's victim advocate might be called counselor even though she works for the police. And what we found.
I'm from a family of 10, so conflict, and I mean, it so makes sense to me that of course, I mean, who gets to use the bathroom first is a huge issue in large families. So when you're and domestic violence shelters are immeasurably more complex in their dynamics. So.
And we do know that from studies of staff in programs and coalitions that conflict resolution training is one category of training that folks have been trying to provide.
Okay, in the back here.
It's easy to have missed that in the blur of numbers there. 10% were age 50 or older. It was less than 1% who were over the age of 65. And we did find that they reported satisfaction levels and respect specifically based on their age at equivalent levels to the other survivors who responded.
Okay.
But there were some other kinds of differences, which are fully elaborated in the full report. So I urge you to take a look.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Having worked in shelters before, I would be interested getting back to the conflict resolution question again to find out. And I don't know that you asked this particular question, but to find out whether those individuals who thought their conflict was resolved satisfactorily. Was because the person they were having conflict with left the residence.
A terrific question, and no, we can't answer that one.
But that's not really the solution if you're in
that general. Exactly right.
I actually have three questions, but I'll try to cram them into one. What you do with a study like this has been so needed. But it is sort of a client satisfaction kind of approach, so we sort of don't know. I always feel like the real world outcomes that kind of limit how well you can do. When I was at St. Horizon, which is the goal of shelter safety for the time they're there. And we have longer goals which would require following them after they leave shelter. I'm thinking safety planning, for example, that some data that we have shows that, you know, they like safety planning is a great thing, but it doesn't actually make many people say that. Mm-hmm. Because the reality is it depends on the abuser and what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're trying to accomplish something that we have no control over, so it looks like we're not doing a great job sometimes. On the other hand, or housing, there is no housing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can't really make people's lives better. So in terms of and my final thing, I hope we have a response to one. So I did a little mini version of this study in New York City, which changes things a lot. And even though I worked with two shelter directors who were pretty tough, women from their own community at the shelters, you ended up being slightly paternalistic. And women actually wrote in and said, you know, how do you like the parenting classes? And do you need them? Do you want them? They might have, don't need parenting classes in shelters, right? You go out and get a job.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, how do you like the job training? Don't need job training. I need you to be in my college tuition so I can get a real job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so we got all this sort of, yours seemed more psychologically oriented, but we got some pretty tough feedback from them that we weren't giving them what they wanted. It was writers, which was amazing that we got, because they just took us in anything. So our checklist didn't capture it.
So I think in that context, some of the very concrete needs that were identified, the fact that they reported a job or job training, help with housing, safe and affordable housing, et cetera, were things that the majority received, I mean, I forget the specifics and the degree of it, it is notable. So that we did ask those kinds of questions. And I think that I have more confidence in these results because of their link to the experimental longitudinal studies that followed women over a period of a couple of years and found that those particular outcomes were associated with longer-term well-being and safety. So that adds some strength and credibility, I believe, to the utility of these findings along those dimensions. But you raised some really good points.
Well, we thank you so much for that question, but we are out of time. I hope you all enjoyed the session and thank our panelists again.